The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I must confess to feeling a little pulled in different directions this morning about what to speak about. How many of you were here yesterday to hear Stephen Batchelor? So just a few of you, okay. It aroused some thoughts and confusion in some people. So I thought perhaps of speaking to that confusion a little bit. But my conclusion in terms of that is that I've only had a few hours to reflect, and I'll speak about that tomorrow night. So today, the topic I thought of talking about actually does touch on some of what Stephen talked about yesterday. He mentioned the five aggregates several times, and that is the topic that I'd like to explore today, the five aggregates. A couple of weeks ago when I was here, I talked about paying attention to bodily experience through the direct contact with our physical sensations, and how that familiarity with the body could lead to an understanding of the distinction between mental experience and physical experience. And so I focused on the body and touched into our mental experience in ways we could see the distinction between mental and physical experience. Today, in the teaching on the five aggregates, I'd like to go into in a little more depth the mental aspects of experience. So the term, the five aggregates, the aggregate, the term in Pali for aggregate is, I mean, aggregate sounds like such a technical, dry term. You know, it doesn't connect with anything for us in terms of experience. We don't really resonate with that term in terms of experience. The term in Pali that it's translating is khanda, Sanskrit skanda. And it's not a technical term in a Pali. It refers to, it's a term that would be used in day-to-day life. And it basically is said to refer to bundle, collection, group, something like that. Heap, pile. So this term aggregate is used to describe various kind of groups or ways in which to divide apart our experience through which to understand it. And these five are the aggregate of the body, which we talked about last week. The other four aggregates are mental. So this teaching really goes into depth on the mental side of our experience. So the other four are feeling, whether something the feeling aspect, whether something's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Perception, the recognition aspect. Consciousness, the knowing aspect. And mental formations, or the volitional aspect of our mental experience. So each of these things can be seen as just kind of a collection or a group or a process, sets of processes that go on in our experience. If we think about this term khanda a little more, just think about what a heap is. It's something made of smaller somethings. Or a bundle is something that's made out of smaller somethings. So Sally Armstrong said in a recent Dharma talk, we can think about these aggregates as being stuff made of other stuff. And this made of part is a huge part of the teaching on the five aggregates. that the they're defined in terms of both in terms of process, that is how we experience our world, and in terms of content, or what we experience in our moment-to-moment experience. So they're basically a description of the ongoing mental and physical processes that are always happening for us. They go on all the time, whether we're awake or asleep, whether we're mindful or not. These processes are happening. They are a description of the nature of mental and physical processes that happen to all human beings, and to some extent, all living beings. So in this talk today, I'm going to try to emphasize the process nature a little bit of these aggregates and of the teaching. Sayadaw Utejaniya is the first person that I heard of speaking of this teaching in this particular way, that these aspects of feeling refers to the process of feeling, perception refers to the process of perception, not necessarily the things felt or the things perceived. And as I went into the texts to explore a little more on these teachings, I found that they're described actually primarily in terms of process. So, for example, the definition of the feeling aggregate says, it feels. That's why feeling is said. What does it feel? It feels pleasure. It feels pain. It feels neither pleasure nor pain. So it brings both of the sides of the process of feeling into the picture in terms of the definition, that it feels. That's the primary point of the aggregate, that it is this process of feeling. What does it feel? It feels pleasant, it feels pain, it feels neither pleasure nor pain, neutrality. And they're all described in this process way. So, why understand this? I want to start a little bit with that, having just given a little touch on this teaching of the five aggregates. Why is this a helpful teaching? Why understand this? I think that part of the reason is that it's an excellent way to understand and to, it's kind of a framework for understanding our experience. The whole of our experience. Everything that we experience will fall into one of these five groups, one of these five aggregates. So, It's a pointing to the actuality of our experience, the experience of what and how is happening to us, as opposed to our ideas about it, our views and opinions about it. The Buddha talked about the five aggregates as being places where we tend to cling. They're often described as the five aggregates of clinging. And as Stephen mentioned yesterday, that the aggregates, these qualities of mind, are almost imbued with clinging. So we're encouraged to understand these aggregates because they are the place that clinging tends to infiltrate. Sometimes the five aggregates are described as synonymous to suffering. Suffering tending to be imbued with clinging. So understanding these processes, we can begin to see that while there is that kind of really deep interweaving with clinging, the clinging is a process that happens within the formations aggregate. It's a process that happens that doesn't always have to happen. The Buddha also described these five aggregates as particularly sticky places around which the idea of self arises. That they are kind of the magnets for identification, for saying, this is me, this is mine, this is who I am. So studying these aggregates is a powerful way to study the process by which we create and believe in self. So as I was going through creating notes, creating this talk, I realized that there's a lot of material here. So today what I'm going to talk about is the five aggregates themselves and how we can start to recognize them in our experience. How can we explore them? How can we get familiar with them in our experience? And next week, I'll continue the talk by talking about this process of selfing around the five aggregates. I realized that it was way too much to try to put all of that into one 45-minute talk, so I'm going to split it up. So, body, form, the aggregate of form. This is a lot of what I talked about the last time I spoke a couple of weeks ago. But in terms of the five aggregates, in terms of the process nature of body, form as is described as what is affected by the world. So it's this, in terms of the aggregate of form, it's described in terms of our experience of physical phenomenon, the subjective experience, as opposed to the matter. That the emphasis isn't so much on the matter itself, it's on the experience of the matter. So last time, and I won't go into this one very much because I did go into this in much more detail a couple weeks ago, talking about looking at the body from the perspective of the elemental nature of our experience as opposed to our thoughts about it. That we often, in thinking about our body, come into thinking about hand or foot or arm or head or stomach, if our stomach is growling or something, that we break up our body and think of it in terms of concept as opposed to direct experience. And so the teaching on the four elements that I emphasized the last time, that begins to undercut the tendency that we have to perceive our body in terms of parts instead of in terms of the actual experience that we're having. So the form includes not only the physical body, but also the sight, the eye and sight, the ear and sound, the tongue and taste, the smell and the nose and smell. That all of those are aspects of form. In terms of the mental aggregates, feeling, perception, consciousness, and mental formations. I'll just describe each of these separately. So feeling, as I quoted a few minutes ago, feeling is the process of sensing, feeling, recognizing pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So it's that process. It's the mental process responsible for the feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So that one's pretty simple. And actually, while it's a subtle experience, it's pretty obvious once we start attuning ourselves to looking at it. Perception is the process of recognition. It's the process by which we make sense of our world, in a sense. There's different levels of perception. In terms of sight, for instance, there's the level of perception that recognizes kind of the bare sense data coming in terms of form and color. And then there's a level on top of that that understands through repeated experience what that form and color means to us. Yellow, sort of yellow, rectangular, folder. This is all the process of perception. We all see and experience the form and color, but often the form and color aspect is considered like, it's not really recognized that we are seeing form and color. We see folder. The process happens so fast, this process of recognition. Now, the first time we see something, it doesn't happen that quickly. We look at it several times, and we may, you know, need to explore it from many different angles before we come up with an understanding of it. You look at a baby experiencing something for the first time, and I got to watch a baby discovering its hand, you know, and I could see as he turned his hand, it's like I could see him understanding that there was a connection between the movement and the sight, you know, that it was fascinating to watch him explore this experience of the seeing and how it's connected to all these other experiences. So there are very sophisticated levels of recognition and perception that go on. It's a very helpful process. It's how we get through our day. It's kind of like a shortcut in a way. So the process of perception is basically one of matching. It's of remembering, of recalling things that we've experienced before. It's a process of matching what we're experiencing here and now to memory, coming up with the best possible alignment and giving an assignment of a name, basically. But this perceptual process is a process of naming, of conceptualizing, creating concepts. Now, I'm going through these in an order that's not traditional, but I'll explain why in a few moments. The third one that I'd like to talk about is consciousness. This is basically the process of knowing, the meeting of experience, just this recognition of something coming into contact with experience. Usually understood as just a bare, simple knowing. It's said that there are six kinds of consciousness, and there's also said to be six kinds of feeling, six kinds of perception, six kinds of consciousness. They are consciousness, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, smell consciousness. No, I did nose consciousness. So the five senses, seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, consciousness of each of those, and consciousness of what's happening in our minds. Mind consciousness. And I'll talk more about this. These three, feeling, perception, and consciousness, I look at these three as being the basic process by which we meet our experience. They are three basic processes by which we meet our experience. We feel it, we conceptualize it, and we know it. It's very hard to tease these apart. In fact, in the Buddhist teachings, it's said that these three are conjoined and that you cannot separate them in order to describe the difference between them. It says, because what one feels, that one perceives, and what one perceives, that one knows. So I understand these three as arising together in a moment to help us make sense of our sense data that's coming in, with each of these aspects being a slightly different facet to the experience. We can recognize the different facets of the experience, but we cannot really pull them apart. We can kind of emphasize or recognize that we're seeing through one of the facets more than the others. But we can't really take them apart. The fifth aggregate, volitional formation. This is described as, and I think I'll read this to you, it's kind of described as that which puts together experience. It's basically the intentional actions, the mental activities other than perception, feeling, that shape our experience. Mostly involving volition, choice, intention. So it says in the text about this, why are they called volitional formations? They construct the conditioned, therefore they're called volitional formations. And what is the conditioned they construct? They construct conditioned form as form. They construct conditioned feeling as feeling. They construct conditioned perception as perception. They construct conditioned volitional formations as volitional formations. They construct conditioned consciousness as consciousness. So what this is saying is that the volitional formations actually construct this whole of our experience. They construct those things it says volitional formation constructs are the five aggregates. So the volitional formation is essentially what shapes our experience. It's the process by which we create, it is the process which creates experience. So, for example, anger. Oh, let me say one other thing too first before. So volitional formation, the what of volitional formation, the how of the volitional formation is this process which constructs conditioned experience. It's essentially how our conditioning comes about is through this area of volitional formation. So another the what of our volitional formations or the results, in a way, are all of the aggregates. And also, it's often described as the many mental activities that involve some kind of choice, volition, or intention. This includes the vast majority of our mental experience. It includes emotions. It includes thoughts. It includes states of concentration. It includes states of bliss, of joy, of rapture, of calm, of peace. All of those are these volitional formations, the what of the volitional formations. So let's take an example of one of these whats, like anger, for instance, and see how it shapes experience. So when we're angry, it impacts our body through perhaps tension, tightness. It distorts our face, perhaps. We get tense in our body. We may actually act out of anger. So that volitional formation of anger forms or shapes the body. It shapes how we feel. The anger often creates feelings of unpleasantness. The feelings become unpleasant. We perceive things through this filter of anger. Things that may not normally provoke anger may then end up provoking anger. I had a demonstration of this. It wasn't exactly anger. It was more like aversion. I was just feeling massive aversion on many retreats, but on this one particular retreat. On this one particular retreat, I was filled with aversion while I was doing walking meditation, and I could feel this aversion. And my eyes happened to land on somebody's shoes. They were sitting at the other end of the path. And there was this explosion of, why did they leave their shoes there? This is how our perception is altered through anger. We perceive things from an angry perspective. Our consciousness gets kind of colored by this anger. That, you know, the consciousness being just the bare, what we're noticing, what we're recognizing, just the bare meeting of experience, what's kind of impinging on us. And in a way, what we see as impinging on us comes in through a filter. So this filter of anger kind of tends to direct our attention, which then results in consciousness or awareness of specific things. Then, in terms of volitional formations itself, anger tends to construct more anger. When we're following that path of anger, this is a very familiar feeling for many of us, we just see how it builds. So in this way, the volitional formations shape all of our experience. So this one is pretty key. So I'd like to talk for a little while about how we can explore these in our moment-to-moment experience. You know, the Buddhist teachings are, I find them intellectually fascinating, but the intellectual fascination is really not the point. Just as a kind of a description of how things break apart is not the point of this. The point is to turn and look at this in our experience, to explore, to use it as a tool towards direct investigation of our experience. So how can we use this as a tool? One of the ways to use it as a tool is to see our experience through this framework. So understanding the body, this is, again, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, recognizing the bodily experience apart from the mental experience. What is the bodily experience? It's not hand or foot or or head or mouth. It's pressure, coolness, dryness, vibration, tension, and sight, form and color, sound, pitch and tone. If we were eating, there would be bitter, salty, sweet. It's the bear kind of coming into the actuality of experience, as opposed to the way we normally experience things, which is through perception. We usually experience things through our concepts of them. So it's actually pretty hard to eat an orange and not taste orange. But instead to notice tart, sweet, and the coolness, the liquidity. It's very hard to do that because we so quickly move into the recognition. Oh, orange, I've tasted that before, I recognize that. It becomes orange. But all that it is, physiologically really, is this particular blend of more tartness, sweetness, liquidity, etc. So coming into the body, recognizing it through, with the, seeing if we can recognize, again, this thing I emphasized last time, the distinction between what's mental and physical, so that we can more and more see without, or see in terms of the more basic elements of experience, as opposed to the larger concepts that we usually see through. So the mental aggregates, as I said, they describe both the how, the processes of the mind, how we experience things, and what we are experiencing. The what is usually easier to see and recognize than the how. It's kind of hard to take apart processes initially. But through observing what is happening in each of these four mental aggregates, we can start to see a little bit around the processes. So in a sense, looking at the what of experience, looking at the what of each of these aggregates, begins to reveal the process that underlies that aspect of experience. So formations, I'm going to start with formations because this is actually one of the easier ones to see. We can see, we're all familiar with our mental reactivity, our mental responses, which is a huge area of this mental formations. When we're experiencing any emotion, any strong reactivity, that is happening within the realm of mental formations. And as I described a few minutes ago, it impacts all of the other aggregates. So we can see its impact. So recognizing what is happening, recognizing anger is happening, is the what. And beginning to see how it colors our world and shapes our world is beginning to understand the how. It's beginning to understand the process itself. It's really, really helpful to understand the process because we identify with processes, and I'll talk more about this next time. But as we start to explore these processes, we see that they're just going on. There's not somebody doing them. They're just naturally happening. They happen in every human being. So recognizing emotions and how they color our world is one way of looking at formations, of this aspect of volitional formations. Another place that's a strong avenue into observing this area of mental formations is through looking at choice. what choices we make. This is a kind of a subtle movement of mind, this movement of choosing what to do. But we can notice this moment, and a good place to play with this is in looking at bodily movement. There's an intention or a choice that happens before every action of either body, speech, or mind. They're more and more subtle. The intentions around bodily action are more obvious than the intentions around actions of speech. The intentions around speech are more obvious than intentions around acts of mind. So starting with exploring intentions around body is a good place to begin looking at this. So we can notice we're about to move. We can know we're going to move before we move. That moment of knowing we're going to move before we move is recognizing this aspect of choice, of intention. It's recognizing this quality that the mind, in a sense, pushes the body. So we can see that it is intention that conditions in action. We see this about to moment. We see this recognition that, oh, I'm about to move. And then we move. And we begin to see the direct link between that intention, that impulse in our mind, and the movement. This is a place that we very often identify with. It's a huge place of identifying, a huge place of saying, I am the one in control. I'm the one who chooses. I'm the one who decides. There's no I that chooses. Choice chooses. The arising of choice, the arising of intention, creates the next thing. So we can also see in this exploration that the intention itself, the arising of that choice, is itself conditioned. So a simple example of this, just to give you a flavor of this. If you've been driving for a long time in your car, hours without water, thirst arises. This conditions the desire to have a drink. The desire to have a drink conditions the intention to stop the car, to stop and get a drink. So it's just this process of body conditioning mind, mind conditioning body, body conditioning mind, mind conditioning mind. Just an unfolding of that. So feeling, the exploration of feeling, the what of feeling is the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. So exploring that pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of experience, it's a very powerful place to explore, because in that process we see the process, begin to see the process of how suffering is created. We see that pleasantness in our experience leads to liking, leads to wanting, leads to needing, leads to grasping, leads to greed. So recognizing that bare aspect of pleasant, we see where it fits in this whole process. Wow, I thought I was going to have enough time to do this whole thing. I'll say a few more words about perception and consciousness, and then I'll continue next week. So perception, the process of perception is this result of recognition. We can explore this. A good place to explore this is through sound. This process of perception is a hard one to see in some ways, but sound is a good place. If you are sitting here in meditation, for example, the car drives by. I've used this example a lot, so many of you have probably heard this. A car drives by, there's the hearing, there's the sound that comes in. And then there is the process of recognizing that sound. We name it, we give it a name, car. We may even see an image of a kind of car. So seeing that distinction, see that difference between the hearing and the recognition, that's beginning to explore this process of perception. The process of consciousness is this process of knowing. Every moment of experience that we meet, there's something that's known and there is the knowing of it. And this is a difficult thing to tease apart. But it's possible to recognize either the thing that is being known and its qualities. Pressure, hardness is being known right now through the contact with my hand. So pressure, hardness are, and the qualities of that are being known. The emphasis and the awareness can be on that side, and it also can be on the side of knowing. The knowing of the pressure, the knowing of the hardness. This is not something to try to do. The mind naturally can distinguish between these two, and it does distinguish between these two, but it's not something you can choose to do with your mind. Initially, just be with the experience and begin to recognize, kind of holding the idea in your mind that it's possible to know the difference. At some point, you may begin to recognize the difference between the quality of the object and the quality of the knowing of the object. That's all you really need to do. So, I'm going to just say this last thing very briefly. How does mindfulness fit into all of this? Mindfulness is within the aggregate of mental formation. It is the capacity of our minds to see what is taking place in our experience. It's like a mirror. It reflects what's going on in the five aggregates. It's a self-reflective capacity of our minds to see what is happening. Like a mirror, it reflects this mind-body process. The five aggregates are always going on. They're always happening. And one way to explore them and explore mindfulness is to recognize in that moment when mindfulness comes back into being, it's coming into some configuration of what is already happening in the mind and body. There's no need to construct anything to pay attention to. The five aggregates are already happening. Can you just see what is already there? This has been a huge mind-opening exploration for me with respect to mindfulness. The process of mindfulness can be waking up to what is already happening. So I'll try to leave some time for questions next week. Thank you for your attention.